Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Money in the Bank review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dadley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to discuss everything that just happened at Money in the Bank. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review Raw and SmackDown, but also NXT, AEW, Dynamite, pay-per-views, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, joined by Michael Hamflett to review Money in the Bank. You can probably tell I'm not at home because of my booming voice, getting very excited about the return of John Cena and Nikki A.S.H., Nikki Ash, Nikki Cross, whatever you want to call her, and big bloody E, Michael Hamflett, being Mr. and Mrs. or Ms. or Ms. They have the Money in the Bank holders. What do you think of the whole pay-per-view, though?
Good. I want to shout a great deal louder than I'm allowed about Big E in particular winning that briefcase because I felt it. God damn it, I felt it. I want to apologise for everybody listening to this podcast and having to tweak their volume every single time we volley our thoughts to one another because I wish I could share in your louder excitement. This was it's a decent show, elevated by a crowd. It was. I'm not going to suggest this was like a Hall of Famer night, but they delivered like a major, major surprise. No real duffers on the card and like some stuff that was actively pretty great. So like a really, really nice time made better by a live crowd. And that's what live crowds are supposed to do. I don't have too many complaints like off the top.
Very surprised. Let's start. Let's dive straight into it, mate. Let's start on the kickoff because I think we didn't have a chance, obviously, on our preview. I think they waited till a minute after we'd started or finished recording to announce that the Mysterios were going to be defending those SmackDown tag titles against the Usos. But even if we had, I sense we'd have said, well, they ain't changing hands on the kickoff show and they're going to just use this to further the storyline of them needing Roman's help. And in reality, it's not the case. The Usos are your new SmackDown tag team champions, once again, using shenanigans to defeat the Mysterios. And there wasn't even a Mysterio dad attack to compensate for that on the kickoff, Hamflett.
We'll get it one day, mate. We'll get it one day. Maybe it wasn't meant to be this time because we weren't there to preview it, perhaps. I don't know. Yeah, it was interesting, this. It was, I suppose, one of the more enviable spots of the night, this, because this was going to be the first major match in front of this paying pay-per-view crowd, a hot pay-per-view crowd as well. So the Usos and the Mysterios probably didn't mind being on the kickoff, knowing what that position represented tonight of all nights. And they were great at paying it off. As sure as the sun rises and sets, the Uso never miss on the kickoff. They should probably be never relegated to this spot ever again. But this was really enjoyable, really enjoyable. Dominic took a particularly nasty beating, which I think spoke to where he is in the pecking order at the moment and this idea that bully heels will want to try and isolate him and pick him apart in front of his dad, no less, to cause physical and emotional damage. The Usos are at this point in their run where they're both skewing villain in order to satisfy the needs of Roman Reigns. So I thought that was nice. Great finish. You had like, you were able to use the family ties between the two sides for the best possible outcome. Rey is indisposed, so his son is left for the Sharks, but then all of a sudden manages to make the save, and then Jimmy is forced to take a bullet for Jay, but then Jay couldn't finish Ray until Jimmy was back in the fold helping him out, you know? Like, this was a family affair, and it was about just who knew each other better on the night, and it fell to the more experienced of the two in-ring duos, at least. So pretty great, this. I can't decide as well. This might be a generous take. If it's actually really smart that this was a kickoff match, because Roman is there calling him main event Jay, and he hasn't even made it onto the pay-per-view. Is that a nice nod? Is that like a nice bit of writing, or is that a generous bit of analysis from me? I'm not sure, because this felt every bit like the kind of tried and true WWE kickoff tag match. But it's funny that they were celebrating with Roman patting him on the back. Look what I've done to elevate you to exactly where you've been for the last 10 years. Like, I thought that was, you know, quite a cute wrinkle to the story, that if and when they want to revisit it, Jimmy's got his proof to Jay that Roman's done nothing for you in this time other than beat you up and abuse you. So I thought that was like quite a nice touch that they revisited that later on. Good, this, like, thoroughly entertaining. I wasn't doing backflips for other things that I was on the show, but it was nice. And few complaints.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe a nice sort of touch where the referee's off the back of what happened on SmackDown looking for a holding of the tights, and that obscures his view of the Usos' foot on the other Usos' back to help with the pinfall. But nevertheless, yeah, the Usos are your new SmackDown Tag Team Champions. And like you said, that was a reference later on in the show with a backstage segment of them saying, look at all of us, eh? What are we like? And Roman Reigns going, well, you know, you've just got here, so let's not, you know, celebrate too hard just yet. Draped in all the gold. Well, they're silver, so that's not... Anyway, let's start on the main card with the women's Money in the Bank ladder match. For a match that went pretty much the same length as long as the men's, it didn't have a great deal to write home about in this match. We all knew the focus was going to be on Alexa Bliss, Hamflet. It was for everyone's entrance, it seems. And then I'm really hopeful off the back of this. We'll talk about, obviously, Nikki winning the briefcase in a second, but I'm hopeful, at least in part off the back of this, that WWE will recognize fans ain't into this. Like, the moment where she was hypnotizing Zelina Vega or trying to summon the briefcase down with her powers, it was quite loudly rejected. But what did you think of that? And what did you make of Nikki just going, well, if everyone's going to stand at the top of these ladders fighting, I'll just climb past you and get the briefcase?
Yeah, so I thought that finish was pretty great, actually. I still don't really know what to make of Nikki Ash, Nikki A-H-S, however we're supposed to like name her. I don't know if it's particularly, I don't know, much of a superhero move to almost like sneak in through something of a back door. If you can have a back door in a ladder match, I don't know. But I don't know if it's like that kind of, or if it's actually really smart. And that's the whole point of this character, that she's realised she's just decided to go all in on embodying something that she knows fundamentally is a bit daft, but she believes in. And when she believes in herself, she can achieve anything. And that's just what she's done here. I don't know. Like, but I liked it. I like there's so many contrivances often in ladder matches, and there's so many ladder matches as well. So there was almost something quite unique about this finish being so simple. We've been like force fed a billion ladder matches over the last couple of years, and I haven't seen this finish in any of them. So kudos for them for coming up with that. Yeah, otherwise it kind of felt dominated by the Alexa spots. And this wasn't without other stuff going on as well. Tamina remains one of the more over wrestlers in front of live crowds in WWE in 2021, which is an odd phenomenon. Liv Morgan's selling was fantastic. I completely bought that she was legit injured, and I was on the hook for her trying to reach the briefcase down a couple of times. I love those fingertips teases with Liv Morgan. I think that maybe implies, I mean, it's WWE, it's the SmackDown Women's Division, but it maybe implies that they've actually got plans for her beyond needing a briefcase, you know, like that she is indeed going to be elevated over the sort of the latter summer months into a possible challenger. But then, yeah, it's really hard to look past the Alexa Bliss stuff, really hard, literally, in the case of Zelina Vega, who you would think, considering a marital home, she's pretty used to spooky wrestling bollocks. So I'd have thought she'd have been kind of like immunized against that sort of thing now, but aye, that wasn't ideal. It was rejected. You're right. That was the word. It was rejected. And it just didn't land, you know, like unfortunately, without chooseyournoise.wav, WWE didn't have control over the responses to the stuff, and none of it went down well. And the counter to Alexa Bliss's magical powers don't get any less stupid. She can hypnotize people up a ladder. She can will the briefcase down with her mind. We'll just bury her in metal. How's that? Like, it's no different to, it's, you know, really contextually, it's no different to Randy Orton beating the Burned Alive man with an RKO. It really isn't. Like, the rules of that universe they tried to establish don't make sense. I'm sure a bunch of perverts got the kicks slowing down the footage of her ripping away the bin bag outfit to reveal her old gear. I don't know. Like, I don't know what there is left for this character. I don't think they'll be tired of her. I thought it was telling that every entrance kept cutting back to her.
Yeah.
She was in that position and it would cut back to Alexa Bliss not responding. Then somebody else comes out and then there's Alexa Bliss not responding. She's obviously still a focused player. And the thing is, she is over. It's a really confusing one. People were very, very keen to see her, Alexa Bliss. But as soon as the magic powers were bust out, boos, groans, all that kind of stuff. So I don't know how they're going to kind of navigate themselves out of this now that this is going to be the norm again.
Yeah, the finish sort of took me by surprise because I thought when she got buried under the ladder, she was either going to burst out or appear in a different outfit. I don't know how they were going to get around all that. But obviously also when you see people just scrapping at the top of a ladder, you expect, you know, one ladder to get sent one way, one ladder to get sent another, or, you know, whatever it may be. And then, yeah, Nikki just went, excuse me, and grabbed the briefcase. So fair enough. Intriguing to see where they go next with that. We'll follow that up on the Raw preview with myself and Michael Sidgwick in a few hours' time. Move on and talk about the Raw Tag Team title match, AJ Styles and Omos defending against the Viking Raiders. I said this on our What Went Down Hamfler, and it sounded like a backhanded compliment, but this was a Raw match. But it was always going to be a Raw match. This was a match that got hoisted on the pay-per-view because they lost Bianca Belair versus Bayley in an I Quit match, and they had to, you know, add more time to it. So they put this match on there. It didn't need to be any more complicated than it was. They still did some enjoyable stuff. Eric and Ivar are still, you know, it's shockingly agile. Ivar always gets their, you know, the letters written home about it. But Eric is just a really great performer. And his knees looked brutal to take AJ Styles and almost down to a knee. But I think all of us knew going into this that the Raw tag titles were never going to change hands, were they?
No. And I don't know how this match, probably more than most, might have been impacted by our differing viewing experiences. You know, you've said before that you don't get to really take in all of the sound when you're doing the stream. Yeah, this was really tricky. There's going to be more matches, I think, in WWE than AEW in terms of transitioning out of the pandemic era back into the normal one, where there's going to have to be a learning curve. WWE just flatly refused to deviate from their tag team formula, which is heels get loads of heat, babyfaces make a comeback, and then you head to the finish. Like, that's just, you know, babyfaces start hot as well. That's the other element of that. It's been the formula for ever and ever and ever and ever and ever. But the problem was, if there were really baby faces in this match, it was the champions. It was AJ and Omos. The fans were interested in, fundamentally, really in their heart, interested in one wrestler, and that was AJ Styles. They took to him like a star. He got the biggest pop of all of the wrestlers. And they wanted to see Omos do giant man stuff. And they got that in the form of some of this. But it was Ivar, I believe, that he did the like Ric Flair corner throw to, which looked incredible. You know, like a virtual press slam. I think it was Ivar, wasn't it? And, you know, like the Omos assisted Hurricane Rana at the outside, stuff like that. It was like really cool. You're getting big man stuff here. But AJ was the guy that they were there to see because he's actually a star. There was a point where one of the Viking Raiders kind of turned to the fans with the big, "We're in a raid," or whatever it was he was saying. And it got that like John Cena, Randy Orton, Royal Rumble standoff crickets. And it was like, oh, it's not your night. So then you've got this match that's taking place in reverse because the comebacks are being met with silence until the heels do another cutoff. And then it's like, yeah, the heels are back in charge. And it really knackers the dynamic. And what you're watching is just a series of spots generating reactions rather than a match that you can really sink your teeth into. I think it was also, you know, you point this out, this was a Raw match until it wasn't. But problem was, you know, as much as, you know, we might like the Viking Raiders, and it's been a fairly basic and solid build to this match, it wasn't just the clips of their feud with the Street Profits from last year that served as a reminder that it's been a long time since the Viking Raiders were a topical concern. They're a long way short of feeling like credible champions, and unfortunately that kind of made them feel a long way short of being credible challengers too. There were some nice things to look at in this match, but I don't think as a whole it worked. And it was the first point, and I include SmackDown in this, where there was a little bit of a creeping sense of boredom. And WWE, again, need to work to avoid that for as long as possible with live crowds. Like, it's Raw tomorrow night. They've got to try and get through an entire Raw where the fans don't tire. And it was slightly alarming that only the second match on the card just felt I was that little bit of, I think I might take my toilet break now. So, yeah, I think this is going to be the case with a few things. Like, WWE would have just found this easy. They would have just pressed boo and pressed cheer when it made sense for them. They can't just age at matches exactly how they want and guarantee these reactions from fans, even though fans are proving themselves hot for a lot of it. They're not going to guarantee you'll be hot for everything.
What followed was a match that got a great deal of heat, but the right heat, in my opinion. The stop, it's he's already dead award goes to Kofi Kingston in this match, because we're going into this, Phil and I talked about on the stream as well, we'd set up, I tell you what, they've been doing some bad stuff on Raw for the last, well, how long have you got? But they've built this really well, and that two count when Kofi gets that Trouble in Paradise or whatever is going to be great, and they swerved us. Bobby Lashley murked him for the majority of the 7.5 minutes that this match was. Dominator after dominator after dominator. And there's a couple of hurt locks in there. And my word, if you want to reestablish him as the threat that he is going towards a match with, let's just say, a generic big guy, this was the match, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I think on the preview, I alluded to this maybe being an elongated version of the Brock Lesnar match. They sold you something on Monday brilliantly. They sold you a raging and rattled Bobby Lashley. He was both those things, and it was destined to be a toxic cocktail for Kofi. Indeed, they might have decided to give you the hope spot at one, because the Trouble in Paradise is perfect as well, isn't it? Because it's almost like a glancing blow from nowhere. Like, Kofi could have just had like one last power up. He floors Bobby. He can't even make the cover. He drapes an arm and then he only gets two or something like that. And they didn't even really feel the need to give him that. They were loyal, first and foremost, to the Bobby Lashley character they'd honed earlier this week. And you had the perfect physical declaration of that. Kofi, in his defense, sorry, in support of his work in this match, just brilliantly shaped his body as a man being chucked around by a bigger man. The second Dominator, like, I don't know how he made his body so loose and limp looking, but he was just like, you know, sometimes wrestlers go splat and it's as if their skin starts to melt and just form like a paste with the canvas itself. it was really quite beautiful to look at, but he was just amazing in the role. They did a really good job of like using the build, which had been good, which had been probably Raw's best built feud of the year. They used the build in sort of combination with the sights and sounds of Kofi Mania and all those lovely memories to like create a sense that Kofi was here to play and that Kofi wasn't here to be ragdolled. And even in the way that he was going to the corners at the start of the match, you're like, oh, they're gonna tease the Dream again. You know, this is gonna be really thrilling. And then to pull the rug so quickly and just have, oh no, it is that he's raging and rattled and he's a bit embarrassed and he's going to take it out. It was just so great. I just thought it was just super effective. A real commitment to Bobby Lashley as a champion. He has held the belt for perhaps longer than you'd think, because again, the Thunderdome sort of is a pause on all space and time. But he's had that belt since what? Like just after Elimination Chamber? Like he's amassing a decent run now. And yet, in a way, this kind of felt like the proper start of it. So I kind of hope it is Goldberg at SummerSlam, because I want to see him batter Goldberg too. I've seen a lot of like pushback to Goldberg getting anywhere near this belt and this big match at SummerSlam. I want to watch it. They're just bulls, man. Let them run at each other. And Goldberg's not winning, is he?
No.
So I think Goldberg losing to Drew was kind of effective for Drew at SummerSlam. And I think he could be just as useful for Bobby as well in this kind of form. This was good. Really, really like good economical battering of a nice man.
I felt a bit guilty at the end to be like, well, at least he had the nice Skeletor themed gear, I suppose.
Yeah, I did like that. And I want to say, like, we're always very keen to put over the New Day for their attires. But if it's not a detail that I spotted during the match itself, why on earth was Big E not in E-Man gear to go along with Skeleton. So I haven't had a proper chance to investigate this yet. And shout out in advance to Jonathan Davenport for whatever he's done, because they both looked swish.
Oh, yeah.
But I look forward to trying to make out the words on Big E's gear to the next day, because if it remotely relates to being the master of the WWE universe, they've played another blinder.
Oh.
Speculation. Just speculation on my part. Speculation.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Right, I'd love to know what your thoughts are on the match that came next, because we have, you know, poo-pooed, understandably, justifiably, what has preceded this match between Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair for the Raw Women's Championship. And yet, crotch chops and bird flipping aside, I thought this was one of the matches of the night. I don't know what you thought about how the crowd really received it, but Phil and I thought they just beat the crap out of each other. And I suppose if you're going to transition the belt back onto someone like Charlotte Flair, the way you do it is you do what they did to Rhea Ripley at the end here.
Yeah, it's really important to stress that this match was awesome. And this feud is still the worst thing WWE have done all year. It's like people have to know that there's nuance to these discussions, and both those things can be true simultaneously. Charlotte Flair versus Rhea Ripley has been the worst feud of the year. WWE, as usual, is rewarded by the excellence of some of its professional wrestlers, especially of a Sunday night. We've covered countless pay-per-views, especially in the last 12 months, where it's felt that way, where it's felt as if the wrestlers have dragged bad television, kicking and screaming over the line on a Sunday. And this was one of the great hall jobs of our time. One of the great... These didn't need to carry each other. They needed to carry about 3 months of a minging angle. And again, I don't know how your viewing was impacted, but I don't know if you could see how pissed off Charlotte and Rhea looked with the audience. Mm. But it was because they were booing both of them, and it was because they were chanting Becky Lynch. Remember... the last time they thought in the Thunderdome, and they couldn't decide what sound to create for them. So they created confused muffle.wav. Well, it happened for real. The fans didn't know who to boo, didn't know who to cheer, and then just started cheering for Becky Lynch instead. Both wrestlers looked rattled, for the want of a better phrase, rattled by it. Charlotte flipped them off. Rhea did a face that'll probably be memed tomorrow. It wasn't feeling ideal. You're a bit like, oh God, WWE's back. It's taken one show. Like this difficult relationship that they've now got is back, but they just worked through it. Charlotte and Rhea worked through it. They had a plan. They believed in their story. They wrestled with commitment to the story. Story being, Rhea believed herself to be in Charlotte's head and thus played to that and wrestled with a confidence that she's never had in such a big match, big fight feel. I guess what they wanted you to do, you know how like last month it was about erase and beat the clock. This match felt like it was about erasing everything apart from WrestleMania 36. Honestly, like it was wrestled as if nothing has existed since WrestleMania 36. And it was all the better for it. Charlotte's best match by a billion, million miles since her return late last year. This was the Charlotte Flair of old. Don't know where she's been. Maybe she just didn't feel it in the Thunderdome. Can't really fault her for that either. Rhea Ripley looked a monster losing in defeat compared to the scared, inexperienced young challenger almost that like lost as champion at WrestleMania 36. So like a stark contrast to the ways in which she lost from here to WrestleMania. And like, I don't want to like pat myself on the back, but I think I called this in our preview, didn't I? Mm-hmm. I think I kind of said, actually, I think the natural ending for this weird story is Charlotte winning. And it felt right on the night. I think had Rhea won by the end, it wouldn't have felt like the correct conclusion. This was Charlotte's belt for the taking. They arrived at like an epic feeling near fall with that natural selection. A little bit too much Shawn Michaels in the terms of the, oh my God, what has she had to do? Emotional crossroads stuff. I want a 10-car pileup at that emotional crossroads, so they have to close that road forever. But in the meantime, I guess we're going to still get a lot of hand staring. But yeah, the two count off the corner natural selection. Like the audience was so apoplectic. It was almost like apologetic. It was almost, we're really sorry on this in the first 5 minutes because you two have come to play and now we want to be a part of this, please. And the wrestlers let them in and let them into the story. Let me in. And yeah, like that, the moment she locked in and bridged for that figure eight, and you just know what that means, that it's inescapable. Nobody has yet got out of it and it blatantly wasn't going to be Rhea's night. It felt right. It felt like the perfect conclusion to a class pro wrestling match. I hate that WWE have got this formula because it allows a lot of misunderstood, shall we say, opinions to breathe of, shut the critics up. It won't because it's really bad every week. The churn is minging, but the best wrestlers can wrestle the best matches and it gets them out of jail over and over again. Yeah, this was tremendous. Honestly, this was really, really good. This probably was the match of the night, actually. I think the men's ladder match, which we were about to get to, it was fantastic, but it's a bit of an apples and orange comparisons. This was I'll take a straight singles match any day of the week. This was the match of the night. Rhea Ripley and Charlotte Flair. WWE continues to confound.
Yeah, it was just because Phil and I were sat there going, oh, bloody hell, there we go. Right, well, let's just get on with this. And we had the chewy chuck. We had our sweets ready to throw and catching on. And we were like, oh, hang on, what's happened here? Oh, I think she's flipping off the crowd. Oh, God, those chops are a bit hard. Oh, my God, there's a top rope natural selection. And then, like you say, they just battered each other. Charlotte Flair just rolling back the ears, like you say, that moonsault picture perfect, as always, as it was. Rhea Ripley just going toe-to-toe with her. And then the bit where Charlotte, I can't remember exactly what was being gone for, but Charlotte was supposedly, at least was meant to clip the back of her head on the turnbuckle. Quite happy that she didn't, to be honest. I always think those spots are a bit ooh. And then Rhea's reaching through and Charlotte, the noise, just slammed her head against the ring post, traps her leg in between the post and the stairs, stomps on it four times. And then, yeah, like you say, once you put the figure eight on, it wasn't like, oh, I wonder if she's going to make the ropes. It was just a matter of time of Rhea Ripley bargaining with herself of like, well, I think I'm going to have to tap here. And now that opens the door again, WWE, to go, well, that's twice now that I've taken a title off you, so you've submitted to me, blah, blah, blah. Let's ignore everything that's gone before this. Who knows what's happening next, whether Becky Lynch can be involved like the audience wanted or what. But you can just go back to that story that has been the open goal from the moment these two got together in a ring and tell it again now if you wanted to. I probably wouldn't do it immediately, but there's definitely scope for it. But let's talk about that men's Money in the Bank ladder match because I already realised, I think in what went down, I haven't mentioned the 3MB match that we're heading towards and I'm already annoyed at myself. But so much stuff happened in this match, whether it be Shinsuke Nakamura eating a drip stick as he's about to grab the briefcase. The bit beforehand, I didn't even mention that one went down, with Rick Boogs and Riddle and Nakamura and Kevin Owens just going, what the you knobheads doing? Just great stuff that I had me rolling around. Ricochet just going, do you remember when I was mint in NXT? That's and everywhere else. Just reminding us that bit where he jumps off the ladder, lands on the top rope, and the height he got on that flip to the outside was just bonkers. Seth Rollins teaming up and then turning on John Morrison, as we expected. Riddle hitting everyone with RKOs left, right, and center for his fallen comrade, or I don't know, just not been around, I suppose. He's not dead. Is the summary here, Matt. But I say Matt to Matt Riddle. Not, I'm not that tired. I know I'm talking to Michael Hanflett, by the way. I'm really not tired. I think coming back to the office has been done me the world of good. I've got to be honest. Drew McIntyre.
Are you saying not tired like my kids say not tired? And later on, as soon as you get in the house, you're just going to absolutely cry. I'm not even tired.
Well, yeah, probably, quite possibly. But Shanky and Veer, they're Jinder's heavies. They took out Drew McIntyre. And, oh my God, Big E, oh, just before we get there, because I don't want to forget to mention this, bumped by Kevin Owens, the power bomb to the outside and the ladder breaking in the worst possible area for him to land right on his neck. Fingers crossed he's okay. No reports coming out as far as I've seen that he's suffered any serious injury, but worrying time seeing that. So, yes, Big E hitting a big ending off a ladder and grabbing that briefcase. Big E is Mr. Money in the goddamn bank. He's Mr. Big E in the bank, to use your own phrase against you.
Thanks very much for that. Our best friend holding the golden ticket, eh? What a time to be alive. Felt a lot for that, as I think everybody else did. Let's cover that first so we don't undersell it. The feeling shared by the fan base at large when Big E grabbed that briefcase was one that made you so pleased that the company had the foresight to save this for the return of a crowd. Every shot was better than the last. Every close-up found his face, that beautiful face of his, just filling with more and more joy. And then the camera would cut back to some fans that were going wild, and then it would cut back to him and he would be kind of like grasping it tightly and almost looking a bit introspective atop that ladder. And then it would go back to another popping section of the fan base. And then it would cut to where he's on the corner, like pointing at the briefcase. I've got it now. And then you would get this gorgeous sweeping vista of a full crowd where they don't even need to obscure the hard camera side because there's people in those seats too. It was the perfect time and place to do something that you should have done a lot of years ago, which was acknowledge the need to elevate Big E. Like such a tremendous all-rounder, a hard worker, a guy that knows his worth, everything you want in a wrestler, everything, like a guy that has followed his instincts over and over again, and they've been right over and over again, as with all the members of the New Day. It's going to feel as good, if not better, than Kofi Mania, I think, in terms of New Day guys getting a singles elevation. And it just happened in such a pleasing manner as well. He ultimately was smart and athletic as a babyface victor in a match like this. So that there was no sort of sense. You know that sometimes when you do want to see somebody win the briefcase, but there's a slight smattering of booze in the crowd as a babyface climbs because there was maybe somebody else that was a sentimental favorite. They saved it until the very last moment to test for definite that Big E was the sentimental favourite, and he absolutely was a sentimental favourite. It was as he climbed, and that lovely moment where all of us as a fan base collectively realised he started doing the arithmetic of bodies, basically. Where's so-and-so? Where's so-and-so? And can he come back in? And you're realising, no, they can't. And then it's one more step up the rung, and so-and-so. Like that perfect delivery of that when it's the right guy is something so unique to Money in the Bank because of the stakes of the stipulation. And it just nailed it. It absolutely nailed it. And a great, just a phenomenal last 3 or 4 minutes to boot that arrived at that point as well. As you've kind of discussed, really, all the in-character stuff, like Riddle with the RKOs, Nakamura existing mostly to take a dripstick in the face from John Morrison.
Quick mention of that exchange you had with Riddle, because that was jaw-dropping.
Oh, absolutely tremendous. I think that was all I asked of Nakamura on the preview was to try, just to try. And he tried with what he wore. Those white trousers looked absolutely amazing. And then the exchange with Riddle was fantastic. I liked the Drew thing because the audience, well, it's happened, hasn't it? Drewman Reigns is here. He got booed in the promo that he cut until he mentioned the death of the Thunderdome. And then he came out and he got the dreaded mixed response, and that didn't disappear. He got booed when he climbed the ladder. So him getting taken out was the best case scenario because you didn't want to have that sense of anxiety around something that was booked to be nice and giving for a change. I mean, Drew versus Jinder SummerSlam is going to stink, but we are where we are with that. I almost can't believe they're doing it, but then I completely can as well.
They'll do the match that Elias had where he got electrocuted by a wooden guitar. Because 3MB match.
That'll do. I'll take that. Yeah. Like, just what's the name they gave to that match where everybody always gets injured when you have musical instruments?
Symphony of Destruction.
That one, yep. Yeah. That's it. Jinder can go back on the shelf for another year, the poor sod, when he took a bump off a piano or something. The Ricochet moments were great because when you can agent Ricochet in a ladder match, that's exactly what you should do with him. I loved a little detail, but like, so the springboard 450 into the crowd of people or whatever it was absolutely amazing. The fact he didn't sell that like the rest of them and was able to get back in the ring and immediately re-enter the fray was so thrilling. It's like, yes, that's your offensive move that only an athlete like you can do. Great that he was booked to just get back in there, and he was there for the next thing. The tightrope walk he did was like I'm going to put this out there. I think it was better than Rey Fénix's, because Fénix likes to rush, and as a result, there's always that little like nervousness that a foot's going to just veer a little bit along the way. Ricochet was almost doing like a catwalk. Like, he kind of just...
We said, we saw it and we were, you can't jump from there. You're going to mess this up. You're too far away. And he walked and we went, oh, that makes sense. Like, it was just...
Made it look like he was on a 6 foot wide plank or something, didn't he? Like, there was no balance issues. There was no nothing. That was just a path to him. He's a superhuman. I didn't get the vibes like I did with Liv Morgan, that I felt there was maybe something to get excited from after the fact. Like, back to catering tomorrow, probably. But a nice night all the same for Ricochet fans, if there are any left, because it was just, you've got this guy that should be on billions and billions of dollars and making you even more, and it isn't happening, so it was nice of him too. Yeah, really, really tremendous. Hope Kevin Owens is all right. Don't need another ladder match for the rest of this year, quite honestly. But if you're into this sort of thing, like, one of the best in years.
Let's talk about the main event then. Roman Reigns versus Edge for the Universal Championship. It was a match that they milked for all it was worth. And I quite appreciate that, especially with the "who's the bitch now" line from Roman Reigns quite early on. I suppose the not necessarily unfortunate, because it's building to what happens next for both men, but this match is going to be overshadowed by what happened towards the end and what happened immediately afterwards, won't it?
Yes, and I don't think that's the worst thing in the world that it is. I sense that this match is going to divide opinion in much the same way Drew and Roman did at the Survivor Series, if you remember how, like, things, like, opinions were fairly divided on that one. That kind of, like, that main event feeling match that, to some, myself included, truthfully, didn't really live up to the expectations. I found that this was good, politely good, but it dragged a bit of points. I thought they lost the crowd a couple of times, which was an interesting sensation to have for the first time, I guess, since, like, again, the AJ match didn't lose the crowd. The crowd just were invested in a completely different story to the one the wrestlers were telling. Here, it was almost as if, like, right, you can't have... There was a slight Randy Orton quality to this. Like, it was like, oh, you can have your break. You can switch off for a couple of minutes. Roman's going to jaw jack while he puts Edge in a headlock. And either commentators are going to talk about head of the table and tribal chief and acknowledge me and all that. But, like, if you're just in the arena, they're just lying down, like the tall men being horizontal instead of being vertical. And that's not quite a good experience. Loads of it was really good. I liked a lot how they quite naturally, as far as WWE goes, worked to the chair spot. Like, I thought the Charles Robinson bump was...
I slagged that off immediately and then saw it in the replay and went, actually, that's some really good stuff what they've done there.
Yeah, I thought it was fairly organic to get to the point where you knew they were going to use the chair. And I was glad that Roman introduced it, because it would have been like, it was weird that they were teasing it when it wasn't like an ODQ. So if Edge was going to use a chair, like, oh, I've got this thing, Roman, that's going to stop you. That's how I'm going to win. It's like, you can't win like that. So I love that it was Roman that felt like his ego had been tested, and he was like, that was an insecure choice of Roman's to bring that into the match. And then for Edge to put it back on him and make him suffer and endure. I thought the layout of the Usos and the Mysterios was really nice, because the pop for the Mysterios making the save was huge. Like, yeah, we called the finish almost exactly, that like Seth would find the gap of the Usos Mysterios running and be the difference maker. And ultimately he was, but I still thought it played out fantastically well. Like that was good sports entertainment. Like if you watch back tomorrow when you've kind of got be able to have the volume a little louder, listen to the noise the fans make when there's those boos dreading the Usos coming in to ruin things, followed by a massive cheer when the Mysterios cut them off before they can even do any damage. Love that Edge had those guys on his side. I love that like baby faces like stick together sometimes and it's not just about people coexisting. But yeah, the Seth and Edge stuff was set up well, you know. I saw a few people complaining online on Twitter at the time that Seth got his promo and kind of played his hand a little bit like it's WWE, you know, like then they're not masters of subtlety. After the fact, it was like, I'm gonna have to do something else. I need to get in there. I understand why people are critical of that. I do.
I'm not having that because I
has it not been foreshadowed on television this last few weeks anyway, though? Like they've been telling that story.
I think we knew it was heading, and also there was a bit of me that thought, well, he said I've got next. So there's a bit of you that then goes, when Edge hits that spear, when Roman Reigns looks like he's gonna hit a spear, that you go, it's not happening. We all know Roman's not dropping the title anytime soon. But you think, well, maybe, because Edge versus Rollins with the title and Roman versus Cena without a title, they both still work. So I think that, I'm very brave, Patrick, to just, you've just lost, as it feel?
How are you doing, Seth? Yeah, the I've got next thing. It probably plays to Seth making the second appearance because what started off as a moment of great frustration for Seth was suddenly a case of, hang on, he's not lost. Well, now I'm just pissed off with Edge. Now it's not about the title. Now it's about Edge. So the second run-in is almost what makes it personal.
Yeah.
What makes it like a more of a targeted assault. And now you've got your SummerSlam match, obviously, lined up between those two. Decent. Like, the match wasn't great, if I'm honest. They were losing me a bit in the match, but I thought the finishing sequence was pretty much from the moment the ref went down. I thought it was all very nicely executed and paced for the maximum sort of crowd responses. Again, play to that live audience, which I felt like this did. It was the sort of stuff that like, you know, if it was the Thunderdome match, they'd have done that thing where Roman just would have ultimately beat him down. And then it's so the commentators could do the work and the Zoom calls could do the thumbs down faces, but it's like, Roman is untouchable, that kind of like what he did to Rafe in the Hell in a Cell match. Just like, you get your one hope spot, but ultimately this guy's going to crush you. They were more creative here using like this, having like more of a Lion's Den feel. And I like that a lot. And well, like I've seen yours and Phil's pop on Twitter already. And like, I feel a bit sad that I couldn't hit my own roof with elation, but I got the feeling. I got that like that incredible sensation that you get. And it took like a millisecond of John Cena's music in. And that's the magic, that 2008 Royal Rumble pop all over again, where everybody to a man just forgets themselves and hears that tune and is like, oh, Jesus Christ, it's John Cena. And it doesn't matter what you're thinking 30 seconds later, or it doesn't matter what your views on John Cena versus Roman Reigns are. Isolate what your body did independent of your brain in the split second that his music hit and, you know, apply that to 15,000 people in the building in the Dickies Arena in Texas, and you'll see why this was super effective. I personally refuse to find any fault with that.
Yeah, it's ironic it's in the Dickies Arena because I practically ripped my cock off when that theme hit. I think it's absolutely perfect. This, I don't think booing Cena is the right thing. I think he's playing the perfect role here. I was saying when people were saying, like, oh, he's not coming back for SummerSlam, look at his filming schedule. Now I turn around and say, yeah, he's not winning the title, look at his filming schedule. Like, that actually makes more sense than, oh, he can't pop back for 2 weeks or whatever it may be. I know Phil just showed me before he left on his phone, he is opening Raw tonight. So we'll preview that a little bit later on with myself and Michael Sidgwick on the Raw preview. But it's spot on. He comes back, he immediately inserts himself into what is going to be a huge SummerSlam main event. It's another scalp for Roman Reigns. and he just mugged him off as well. And I don't need to go back and forth and, oh, I'm going to say this on the mic and I'm going to say that. Roman Reigns is stood in the middle of the ring going, oh, I hope everyone now acknowledges me for the, you know, the champ that I am. I'm dominating. No one can touch me sort of thing. John Cena comes back and goes, yeah, you can't see me, bollocks to you. I'm in all green. Wonderful, wonderful end to a pay-per-view that, you know, fans included and stuff, I really, really enjoyed.
Yeah, this was the, you knew something was coming. You knew someone was coming when Roman kind of like was given the stage at the end. It wasn't going to go off the air. The first pay-per-view back wasn't going to go off the air just with Roman Reigns still some title. They'd promised like a major surprise as well without going as far as to who or what that was. People were really panicked about Goldberg and where exactly he might fit into the SummerSlam picture. And I see no reason why people should feel the same way about John Cena. I'm saying all this as if there's like, I'm anticipating criticism. I don't know why I am. I like it. The limited sort of response I saw on Twitter. And by the way, it's great now to not have that as the only barometer. Mm. It's, you know, awesome to not have that as the only barometer. Yeah, like sold out building, like went ballistic for it. And it was hard to sit at home and not feel that too. And that's the point, you know, that's the point of all this. John Cena versus Roman Reigns 2 will be 50 times. And I'm not even banking on this being like an awesome match, but it will be 50 times the match the original was. It will be 100% more effective in establishing Roman as the guy, which we all anticipate it will do. And like 70,000 people in what is going to look like a WrestleMania with a SummerSlam. It's going to be, you know, the NXT's Great American Bash. They're just going to rebuild a WrestleMania set and slap a SummerSlam sticker over it. That's what this year's SummerSlam is going to look like. This is the match for it. And like, what a precedent this sets for other matches on that card as well. You've got now, in this main event, you established two singles matches that are mammoth, that are really big. So what's to say they're not going to be looking for that size and scale for every match on the card? Like, what's to say? This should allow you to believe, well, what's Becky Lynch's biggest match? She's going to be in that one. You know, what's Charlotte Flair's biggest possible title defense? It's going to be that one. Sasha Bianca 2 has got to happen, and so on. It permits you to, like, it's not fantasy booking, it's reality booking of these major, major matches if they're going this big for the Universal title.
Yeah, I think the best summary I can give or the best analysis I can give as we close this up is, yes, I know fans are back, so that kind of skews everything. And obviously, you know, just the whole mood around everything's changed. It's Freedom Day here in the UK. So there's that too.
Mixed feelings.
It's freedom. COVID's finished. What's that? Our Prime Minister's isolating. Okay, fair enough. Anyway, not to get political though. The thing I want to say, yeah, is I'm not only looking forward to the next pay-per-view, which you could easily argue I did a few times during the pandemic era of WWE, I am genuinely 100% looking forward, not just because of fans, but because I want to see what happens in the storylines, looking forward to Raw and SmackDown this coming week. And that's the best, the most ringing endorsement I can give WWE off the back of this pay-per-view. But let us know your thoughts on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to WhatCulture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, including, well, in a few hours now, basically, myself and Michael Sidgwick looking ahead to Monday Night Raw tonight on the Raw preview. I'm actually there subscribing to WhatCulture Wrestling on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review and suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related for us to review on the Raw review on Tuesday instead of a god awful segment, because we all know there's going to be one, regardless of how good. Anyway, this has been the Money in the Bank review. My thanks to Michael Hamflett. Thank you for joining us. Big E is Mr. Money in the Bank.
Yes.
Get in, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're all looking to make more sustainable choices. But making your own shoes out of natural materials could pose a few challenges. The twigs and leaves in your yard aren't exactly comfortable. And while mud does perfectly contour the feet, it doesn't score high on the durability front. But thanks to Allbirds, you can skip all the backyard experimentation. At the Allbirds Innovation Lab, they're doing all the sciencey stuff like research and testing to create shoes from natural, sustainable materials. And their innovative processes mean using less of the bad stuff and more of the good, while making shoes unlike any other. Like the Plant Pacer, made with 100% plastic-free plant leather. The Tree Dasher, a running shoe made from eucalyptus tree fiber. And from Sugarcane, they've made the Superlite, their lightest shoe ever by weight and carbon footprint. It's not rocket science, it's shoe science. Allbirds is making shoes better than natural. They're supernatural. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com today. That's Allbirds.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.